This programme has been granted by the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland Sound and Vision Scheme.
Hello, and you're very welcome to this, the second episode in the four-part radio documentary POSH. That's Port Out, Starboard, Home, where we look at the area surrounding Dublin Port and the people who live and work there. My name is Ger Ledden, and throughout this programme, you will also hear the voice of my colleague Alan Weldon. In this episode, we're going to look at the history surrounding the port, some social initiatives taking place in the Docklands area, and the policing of the port. But first, we ended episode one with some vox pops of children who attend St. Patrick's School, which is situated in the Docklands area. And we're going to start this episode with some more vox pops where the children tell us their favourite things about living in the Docklands area.
My favourite thing about the port is going down and watching all like the big five-star cruisers coming in. And the like the celebrity ones, and just watching them all come in and going out. But my least favourite thing would probably be if you go down to the port to look at the ships coming in, the wind is like really bad.
My favourite thing would be because the ship's in the food, so without the port really wouldn't be able to have food in the containers and everything.
My favourite thing about the port would probably be when sometimes, when I go over with my dad to, because he loves to show me. My favourite part is that sometimes you can go in it and it's real dark, and I love dark. Can't sleep without darkness.
In this decade of commemoration, it is important that we look back at the historical role which the Docklands played during the years 1916 to 1925. Now, Jeff Ledden is a PhD candidate specialising in the role of the Irish Citizens Army and volunteer and troop movements in and around the Docklands during that period. My first question to you, Jeff, is, was the Docklands a centre for radical activity in the build-up to the 1916 Rising?
Yeah, it would have been. I think the thing that comes to mind first is the strikes in the docks in October 1915, which was over kind of rent to pay, and obviously that was an industrial dispute, but it gets quickly tied up into the national question. I'm sure James Connolly is very keen on tying the two strands together, and he uses kind of the industrial agitation as a recruitment for his Irish Citizen Army, who become involved on Easter Monday. As well as that, a lot of the ICA members would have been the work at Dockers, and they would have used kind of the locale as an opportunity to gather weapons for the rebellion. So sledgehammers, for instance, were used in the Royal College of Surgeons, and someone like Captain Frank Roberts has stated he stole sledgehammers from his employment in the docks. Such were that, it would have been part of the ferment for the
And these would have all been physically fit big men as well, I suppose, working in the Docklands last stage. Did the Docklands provide weaponry apart from sledgehammers for the people involved in the rebellion?
Certainly it was a location of importation of weaponry in America. You would have seen a lot of agitation for arms to be moved into the country. Holt is obviously the one that people remember the most, but you can see by the police figures, the DfP figures, just the amount of weaponry that was going through the docks. So for instance, between November 1914 and April 1916, 536 rifles were seized in the Docklands through Dublin Port. In November 1915, 30,000 rounds of ammunition were seized. The following month, it's over 160,000 rounds of ammunition. November 1915, as well, 230 rifles seized. So you can see the amount of guns that are going through the docks at that point.
And did this trend continue after the rebellion into the War of Independence, this trend of providing weaponry?
Yeah, if anything, it increases. After the rebellion, Fogan O'Hare and the IRA, the Sinn Féin League and the Irish Citizen Army.
And of course the Irish Citizens Army were headquartered in the Docklands, in Liberty Hall.
For most of the period their kind of base was in Liberty Hall. They would have done some training in Bradford Place. But kind of the centre of radical labour at the time was Liberty Hall, now of course centre of Sibley.
And not the Liberty Hall that we know now. It's a different, it's the same site and different
different building.
Different
it's
building, obviously.
It gets destroyed in the rising.
Was there ships, obviously, in the Docklands? Were there ever any raids on dock ships?
Yeah, and again, I suppose we're looking at the ICA a lot here, but one of their kind of most successful manoeuvres was a raid on a US supply boat in 1918. The boat was the USS Defiance, which was a US Navy transport vessel that had docked in Dublin on its way back from Dunkirk to Hampton Roads. Figures like Seamus McGowan, Christopher Poole, Peter Poe, George Connolly and Lawrence Corbley were involved in this. The amount of weaponry you're talking about would have been close to 100.45 revolvers, 2,000 rounds of revolver ammunition, 5,000 rounds of Springfield ammunition, and various other lights and pistols.
And these were stolen from?
From the USS Defiance.
By?
By the Irish Citizen Army.
Yeah.
More successful though would have been the arms importation going through the docks from 17 up to, I suppose, 22. Q Company and the IRA would have been one of the more successful avenues there. In 1919, having suffered kind of a loss of weapons through the, after the rising, where over 4,000 weapons were handed in, the company used seamen and keymen to get contact with, you know, friendlies in other countries in order to establish communications, purchase arms and munitions, and bring them into the company. The captain of Q Company has stated, "We carried our instructions as issued by General Michael Collins, Joe O'Reilly, and Sean McMahon, and never had a seizure, capture, or consignment of stuff." The ICA as well had a system in place that was similar, where kind of Glasgow and Liverpool, kind of hotbeds of kind of friendly Irishness, were used to bring arms into Dublin Port, and importers estimated that the quantity was over a ton of explosives for that period.
Jeff Ledden, thank you very much. Pat Ward is head of corporate services with the Dublin Port Company. In this interview with both Pat and John Farley, who is land operations manager of the Dublin Port Company, Pat refers to Dublin Port as being the heart of the economic engine of Ireland, situated inside, as he put it, big grey walls at Dublin Docks. I asked both Pat and John to allow us a quick glimpse inside those walls.
Well, there are a multiple of companies that work within the environs of the port. If we look around the area that we're here today in Port Centre, the port within a half a mile radius of the port Pacific is home to 4,500 employees and a number of companies. So we have various different port user groups, committees, whether it be community or corporate, as you say, where we sit down, for instance, our land operations team would sit down with the various customers that we have in the port, whether it be from the ferry companies, the logistics, or indeed the stevedores, and have regular meetings with those and continue to maintain and manage and develop good working relationships with a number of companies who, I suppose, can be best described as competing against each other within the port and what is can only be described as a cutthroat industry on the Irish Sea. Then going beyond that, we have the Docklands Business Forum, which again, we have very close working relationship with over the last 3 years. They have worked closely with us on our Riverfest event, which is the June bank holiday weekend, where over the course of the 3 days we have river animation, we have landside animation, and it's a celebration of the river, of the port, and a means of bringing people back down to the Docklands area and showing them. A lot of people, and I have to say I confess to be one of them, until I came to work in the port, I never gave a whole lot of thought to what was on the far side of the big grey walls. And this is the heart of the economic engine of Ireland. It's important to us that people know we're here and they know what we do. And we're very focused on trying to reconnect the port with the city. And indeed, obviously, Dublin provides the gateway to Ireland. So we'll be very conscious of that as well.
John Feely, Land Operations Manager.
John Fairley, thank you very, very much for talking to us this morning. John, you're the Land Operations Manager with the Dublin Port Company. What do you do? What is your job? What do you actually work at?
Well, I think operationally the port is split into two areas. It is the marine side, which is the harbour master, and then it's the land side, which is the land operations. So basically, any time cargo either comes in or out of the port, it generally comes into our 650 acre.
Mm.
From that, it then basically either sits down or moves and so on through. So my responsibility is, especially in the areas that are common user areas, to manage the land and manage the way it is used.
Now, for example, I presume, I'm just looking at the windows here, there's a lot of containers, a lot of ships, a lot of movement. Security must be an issue. I presume you work very closely with the customs and excise people and the Gardaí, of course.
Yes, we do. And we would have the likes of those state agencies, either enforcement or regulatory, based here in the port. So we would have very strong connections with them. For ourselves, personally, we have harbour police, which are warranted police officers. And we also have port security, which is basically contracted security that do basically the same job as the harbour police.
Now, the harbour police, that's a historical warranted officer. Right?
That's
been
correct.
Going on quite a...
Since 1870.
Yeah. Are there many harbour police?
No, there's less now. And that has been an intention for some time. And we have a phasing out, phasing in type process. But we have currently some valuable staff that are still with us with the Harbour Police who do a great job. And that is around the whole area of safety and security within the port.
And of course, the fire service. Would that fall?
Yes, well, we had fire protection. We have what are called fire wardens, which work in designated areas. And then we don't have our own fire protection, as in we don't have our own fire station here. But we're very fortunate to have the likes of some very close by fire stations that are within 60 to 90 seconds away, so the likes of Fairview. And the reality is that we have lots of facilities here. We would have probably 130 to 140 tenant properties. And we have a real mixture from bare block lands with containers and so on through to the likes of your upper tier and lower tier Cerveso sites, which may hold all of the high quality products and the fuels, the aviation fuel and so on through. But they come under the control of different legislation and have different companies auditing and regularly checking them as well. But we would have an extensive relationship with the likes of the Gardaí, Immigration, Health and Safety Authority, Environmental Protection Authority, so on through, and a variety of different other ones, and then obviously the standard regulatories, like obviously the standard Gardaí, Dublin Fire Brigade in here regularly. They do training. We have a close relationship. Merino is only 5 minutes away, so they would be in here training their new units, and then we would do lots of training with them.
And of course, my thanks there to both John Farley and Pat Ward. And we will be hearing from both those gentlemen again throughout this series. Dockland areas can attract crime and tragedy. No one knows this better than the members of the Garda Water Unit. To get a glimpse into the methods of policing these areas, my colleague Alan Weldon spoke to retired Garda Underwater Unit Sergeant Tosh Lavery.
I am Tosh Lavery. I was the sergeant in charge of the Garda Diving Unit in 2004 when I retired. I was in charge of the unit from 1988. Or 86, sorry. And I joined it in 1974 when it was first established. That was the first official Garda diving unit was ever established. But most of our training was done in Dalkey. And Dalkey is part of Dublin Port in the sense that the shipping line comes up along the Dalkey Sound and up along there and in along by the light outside or the bay outside in the Dog Leg, and they come up along the Bull Wall and up to Dublin Port. But we done our training in Dalkey and Bullock Harbour, our initial training jumping in and out of the water and snorkeling, and then we done our diving along out in Bullock, starting off from the shore and then out in the boat out the back of the Muglands, and that's where we done most of our training first. And then we used to use Hanover Quay. Hanover Quay was a great place because it's good visibility, you can work from the shore and you can put lads in on the line, and that's the kind of training, that's where we start. out there. So that's how the thing started, and we were given bits of gear that they sell in Lidl now, and Aldi suits, and the other suits we had, 4 and 5 millimetre wet suits for the whole year round. And then there was a dial question, and why the guards are no divers. We were formed, and I stayed in it from 74 to 2004, and I retired. But during that period, we would have went to Letham, Breath of Ireland. But most of our basic training started off in Dublin, Dublin Airport, Docky Island, Bullock Harbour, and down the docks, because we had to go nowhere. We didn't have to travel. And when I think about it, it was only sports training, and there is no, I said it in my book, I wrote a book, Tosh, and I won't mind a good bit about Dublin Port in it, but there's no training for a dead body. I said that. You cannot, but you can put mannequins and do what you like. But the psychological effect on a diver, when you tell him that there's a bottle down there or a knife or a hammer or a golf club, when you tell him there's 3 bodies down, totally different ballgame. If there's bodies, straight away you get a bit apprehensive and you kind of have to get back, you know, a little touch, because when you touch a body underwater, you might be searching for 3 days. You get this little bust of adrenaline, you get a bit of a fright, but then you're delighted because you're bringing them up. Now you're the macho man, you're the fella found them, and you get all these kicks because this is what drives a search and recovery person on. But we have a long affiliation with the Dublin Port down through my life. You know, a torso was found on the Liffey Wall and Bachelor's Walk on the steps. And he went over there, go to work every day, he threw in bits, arms, legs, all. But the big piece, he went over with a pram over there or somewhere, and he threw it in over the wall. And a woman waiting for the bus. The buses used to go the opposite direction that they go now. The quays that they come down now, they used to go up. She was waiting for the bus to Bachelor's Walk. She looked over the wall and she saw this torso sitting on the steps. And it was sitting on the fifth step, and the tide only came up to the seventh step. And an investigation started. We were coming up the Liffey in a boat, and we saw a man and a child hanging out of the boat. And I only met that child. I did not meet her. She made contact with me on Facebook recently, and that's 1977. And we rescued her and her father, and I had the paper cut and I put it up on Facebook 3 years ago. And she only contacted me 2 months ago. And we saved them too. Well, they were hanging. Look, the young man fell into the water. The father was painting the boat. He jumped in. He was then hanging onto the side. We happened to be passing. We pulled the two of them in. It was in the papers. I kept a scrapbook. And I decided 3 years ago to put it up. 2012, up on Facebook. I sent it to this girl and I saw her name. And she only answered me 2 months ago because she said it went into her, I don't know, spam or whatever. But anyway, she's down there and her father's still alive. And that's another thing that we know is, like, from then on you can go on through the years, you know, the tall ships coming to Dublin Port, I remember that. That's another thing. The tall ships were in down there, and I was aware, I was in charge, when the tall ships came to Dublin, I was aware that there was after being deaths in different cities all over the world when the tall ships came. And I was determined in my own head, I said, no, I'm going to die during this one. And what happened was, the night that they all arrived in, you have to understand, when the tall ships come, there's a lot of young people on board those boats. Like the Asgard, we had our Irish crew on. They're all having a few drinks and all that. Next thing, a fella jumped into the Liffey. And then 2 or 3 more jumped in. My old famous, claimed to fame is me, 30 years in the unit, no one died in the unit, you know. I suppose we worked full-time every week, and something bad gear early on in the our careers and that, and we were probably fortunate no one died, you know. I see army lads dying, civilians dying, navy fellas even off the ships, and all kinds of divers dying, you know, and we didn't. And I was kind of proud of that fact as well, you know. And I suppose when we went on a job where we were in charge or part of the safety, no more than going to Slane Castle, 2 times we were never brought to Slane to the concerts, and on both occasions 2 people drowned. And every time we were there, no one did. And we rescued people. Because Slane fellas think they can go across the river in over the fence. But that's when they're full of soup and drugs and they die. But the same at the Dublin Port. That was the tall ships. You know, look, there was lots and lots of bad things happened down in Dublin Port. I mean, down through my years. Other ones that I can, remember 2 young fellas one night under O'Connell Bridge, 2 soldiers. Took off their shorts, a few jars in them. I went to swim, and I remember being called in, and we went in, and I just went in under O'Connell Bridge. I remember it was kind of lit up. I had a big torch. A fella called Tommy Lillis with me, and we just shone the lights. There was the 2 of them lying alongside of each other with their waists the old trousers on him, a few old jars. And I remember fellas coming up to matches in Croke Park, getting a few jars, thinking they could swim across the levee drowning and being called in. That was one thing about anywhere from all the way in from Chapel Hill and Palmerstown down along the levee. Believe it or not, people talk about the levee. Levee was a clean place to search as far as O'Connell Bridge, Butt Bridge, or down, we say, to the past O'Connell Bridge. Was always clear enough there to see. You had visibility. It's only when you went down deeper where the ships were coming in and that it got a bit dirty. Like, I'm from Waterford, the River Shore was the dirtiest river I ever dived in, and the River Lee was the most uncleanliest river with sewerage and everything, you know. Whereas the Liffey, to me, was clean. Like, you know, people classify the Liffey. I mean, we worked from, you talk about the Liffey and the docks, all our work that we done from the Liffey. If you go down along the quays, you'll see those grates along the wall. Well, we done all the security under Dublin Castle. And that security led down to the Liffey. And we often went in under the grating when low tide and walked up through to the castle and up through Terenure and Ratmines and all around under the roads. Because there's a big, big mire of streets. And some you crawl, some you walk under that. But believe it or not, it come down into the Liffey. But the Liffey and the docks and that, like, there's another thing, like the security of Dublin Castle. We always, every time we went down the sewers, we always walked as far as the Liffey to the gate and back. Now, you have to be very careful. When it's high tide or there's flooding and that, you have to be careful in that. And the sad thing about it is, when I was in it early on, I was in it with nothing. Then we went from breeding masks to little white ones. Then we went to ones over your head, and now you must have a full set of breathing apparatus and a dry suit to go down there. And I was down there reading comics for 2 and 3 hours during my early days while we were doing security carrying guns. So we went through the good times and the bad times. We went through the crime and we went through the subversion.
And that was retired Garda Water Unit Sergeant Tosh Lavery. Now, to get an idea of what it's like to work and live in the new Dublin Docklands area, we went out with our microphones and recorders and we took some vox pops of people who actually do work and live in the Docklands area. Rafaela, thank you very much. We're on the Lewis in Dublin. We're just going through the Docklands. You work for Google Maps.
Yeah.
You work in the Docklands. You're from Naples. Do you like the place?
Yes, I really like the place. And I think that for young people, this is the best place ever because it offers you a lot of opportunities. And you here don't work to live, but it's like you also have fun working. And so I think that it's the best thing for young people, you know.
It's 2:30 in the afternoon. We're on the Lewis, just leaving Dublin docks, the point, and we're heading in towards Euston Station. We're the only two on the Lewis. Is it always this quiet?
No, I think it's quiet now because of, you know, the time. Now everyone is working and now it's so quiet. But at, I don't know, like at 6 or 7, it's crazy also in the Lewis.
Do you enjoy the nightlife in and around this area?
Yes, a lot. The beautiful things of this country, of Dublin, simple but also happy.
Now, you're telling me off air, you're from Naples. Naples is a beautiful city. It's got a beautiful port. How do you find the architecture in Dublin port?
Okay, I think that it's completely different. But I don't know. I like Dublin and I like Naples as well. Maybe Dublin is more similar to a metropolis. And Dublin is like, sometimes it gives me this impression, a little bit, so many tourists, so many workers of other countries. So I don't know about the identity, the real identity sometimes of Dublin, but...
I know you work in the Docklands. Do you live in the Docklands?
I live in the city centre.
The Docklands must be very, very expensive to live in.
Yes, yes, crazy, really crazy.
But again, Dublin Port or the Docklands where you're working in Google isn't too far from the Dublin city centre, am I right?
More or less. I think, yeah, it's, but you have to choose. You cannot have everything from life. So I prefer to take this few times to get the place where I work, and then or at the weekend enjoy the whole city centre, you know, be close to the city centre.
It's brilliant. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Do you live or work in this area?
I do indeed, yes.
And what it's like working next to Dublin Port?
It's great to have the water, to have a walk around at lunchtime. It's great to be able to walk around the water. Really enjoy it.
And has the port and the area changed since you began working here?
Oh yeah, when we came here first, there was nothing here. Then the buildings were there, but there was nobody living in them. And then the hotel opened, and then obviously they refurbished the O2. So it now is there's life now in it. And we didn't have the Lewis either when we came here. So the Lewis is great because you can get uptown in a couple of minutes. It's a lovely area. The water, I love to be able to walk along the water. It's one thing that I miss if I'm living anywhere that there's no water.
And what is your least favourite thing about the port?
Oh, I suppose around here it can be a bit dangerous at night. That's about all. But like nothing much has happened in recent times. But yeah, that would be my big worry.
I'm retired. I lived and worked in this area all my life.
And what is it like working or living next to the Dublin port?
Okay.
And has the port changed, or has the port and the area changed since you began living or working here?
It changed big time.
And how has it changed?
Well, I remember ship going up there as a little boy, and I remember all the coal boats and everything else.
Okay.
And over here didn't exist except for the cottages.
Yeah, all right. And what is your favourite thing about the port?
What?
What is your favourite thing about the port?
The Red Lighthouse.
Okay. And
it's beautiful. It's a beautiful place. Mm-hmm. Ringsend's a beautiful place. It's been more modernised and all. It's containers, and it used to be all hand-loaded, and it's now containers. Mm-hmm.
And what's your favourite thing about the port?
Coming home.
I work in this area. It's pretty cool. You get to see a lot of boats coming in and out. A lot of construction going on at the moment. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good. Yeah.
And that brings us to the end of episode 2 of POSH, Port Out, Starboard Home, a 4-part radio documentary on Dublin's Docklands. My thanks, of course, to all those who contributed to this episode.